Why, hello there. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the third hour of the program, the eve of September 11th. We've been talking about that. I got to spend more time on the vaccine mandate, of course. There's a lot of other stuff happening. There's actually some breaking news happening right now. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has left the Texas law in place, the abortion law in place, SB 8, they refer to it as. And their reasoning again highlights some of the hysteria out there. Before I get into that, though, and everything else, the phone number here is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. If you would like to be on this year program, you are more than welcome to. It's kind of a free-for-all today. It is Friday, after all, so you can call in and help set the agenda. Let me explain this issue, because it's the press is doing such a terrible job, as I have said ad nauseum now. I'm just repeating myself. The American press tends to be pro-abortion. Whether you are or not, the American political press in particular and news channels tends to be. And so they oftentimes will willfully misreport things when it comes to abortion. This is one of those situations. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is allowing the Texas law to stay in place for one reason and one reason only. The plaintiffs sued the wrong people. It is law school 101. In order for a court to have power over someone, that person must be responsible in some way. If you sue the wrong people, the court can't help you. And when you sue people and say these people are going to enforce a law, order them to stop enforcing it, and those people have no power to enforce the law, the court can't actually help you. So you have to sue the right people, and they didn't sue the right people. So for all of this hysteria over the courts have overturned Roe versus Wade surreptitiously, that's not really true. It's not really true. What actually happened is the lawyers for the plaintiffs screwed up. They sued the wrong people. And part of me thinks that given the way the media continues to willfully misrepresent what actually happened in Texas, that may have been by design. It may be part of a coordinated PR strategy to rev up hysteria. I don't know, though, that they can rev up hysteria as much on that as the hysteria on vaccines. I talked in the first hour about the legality, and let me just review this real quick. For those of you who weren't here in the first hour, let me review just really quickly the legal issue with Joe Biden's vaccine mandate before I get into this hour now, the political issue. On the legal side of things, Congress established OSHA, Occupational Safety Health Administration or whatever, Occupational Health and Safety Administration. It is a federal agency under the executive branch that Congress established to oversee workplace environments and safety there are. And these guys, OSHA employees, tend to be would-be despots. Anyone who has ever dealt with OSHA will tell you they tend to be the worst of the worst federal bureaucrat. They are invasive. They are bullying. They are inept, and they don't care. And so Joe Biden is empowering one of the most intrusive federal agencies, even more so than the IRS to a degree, to oversee vaccine mandates. And essentially, you must either be vaccinated or tested constantly about COVID. That take your pick. And in so doing, there is a question as to whether or not OSHA has the power under the legislation that chartered them into being. Do they really have the power to do that? Now, there is a legal case called Chevron, and the Chevron standard, let me see if I can actually pull up the Chevron standard the Chevron doctrine. Let me do this. I'm going to read this because it probably will make more sense if I try to explain it in my own words. Chevron deference is a doctrine of judicial deference that compels judicial courts in reviewing a federal government agency's actions to defer to the agency's construction of a statute that Congress directed the agency to administer. The original two-step Chevron process was outlined in the case Chevron USA versus Natural Resources Defense Council, Inc. The 1984 ruling provided federal courts with the following two-step process. The court must determine whether Congress expressed intent in the statute, and if so, whether or not the statute's intent is ambiguous. And then in examining the agency's reasonable construction of the statute, a court must assess whether the decision of Congress to leave an ambiguity or fail to include expressed language on a specific point was done explicitly or implicitly. Now, what does this actually mean in the real world? It means that when Congress creates a federal agency, the legislation that creates those agencies tends to be voluminous, and convoluted, and very ambiguous. And so when there is ambiguity in the creation of a federal agency, under the Chevron test, courts defer to the agency to make sense of the ambiguities, not the courts to make sense of the ambiguities. For a very, very, very long time, there has been a growing argument that you can't do this. In 2001, in the case of United States versus Meade Corporation, the Supreme Court reined in the Chevron step, reined in the Chevron deference, and essentially said a federal court must determine whether or not Congress intended for agencies or courts to possess interpretive authority. And in most cases, that in and of itself is ambiguous. Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh are actually two of the major leaders, and John Roberts saying, we got to get rid of Chevron. We got to rein it in. It's courts should be able to interpret. And by the way, if Congress writes an ambiguous statute, that's on Congress's fault. It's not actually our fault. And this setup is Joe Biden giving OSHA power to enforce vaccine mandates, even though there's not clear statutory authority to do so, but Congress chartered OSHA to establish workplace safety and health guidelines. So arguably, Biden can arguably say, well, so I can mandate a vaccine through OSHA and enforce it at the workplace. So now the courts are given the perfect opportunity to rein in the Chevron doctrine and say, no, you can't. That's too broad, too vague. You can't do that. The courts generally say if something is too broad and too vague and too ambiguous, you can't do it. If I haven't lost you, and if I have, let me get you back here. What's actually happening here is Joe Biden wants the courts to strike this down. Joe Biden knows no president should have the power to mandate vaccines, but he's got to look powerful. He's got to do something. And so he can rely on the courts to say, sorry, Chevron standard out the window. You can't do this. OSHA doesn't have the power. So Joe Biden can say, well, I tried, but it's those stupid Trump judges. It's their fault. So it saves Joe Biden from himself and allows him to blame Trump judges. But the politics of this, we need to focus on the politics of this. That's the legal issue. We need to focus on the politics here. I now maintain we can't really rely on polls except in two ways. If all the polls show something, there's probably a there. And if all the polls are headed in the same direction, there's probably a there. We may not know how many people support or how many people oppose, but we can probably say, we have a sense that the American people are headed somewhere. Here's where the American people seem to be headed in all of the polling. It shows public majority, not plurality, but majority support for vaccine mandates. You and I may not like them, but we should understand, even if we say the polls are wrong, when all of the polls out there show that most Americans favor them, the odds are most Americans favor them. But those are also most Americans living in blue states who are already going to vote Democrat. What about the Atlanta suburbs? What about New Hampshire voters, live free or die state? What about the voters outside Phoenix, Arizona? I mentioned those three states because those three states have not just gubernatorial races this year, they've got Senate races this year, and they're all three states held by Democrats. Who do you think is going to be more fired up to go vote? The people who are glad Joe Biden did a mandate or the people who are mad as hell about it? I got my suspicions. It's not the people who are pro-mandate. Pro-mandate's not going to galvanize anyone. The people who are going to be galvanized and fired up to go vote are the people who are opposed to the mandate and now risk their job and livelihood because of it. Joe Biden has become deeply divisive. If I could invite, now listen, I got to tell you, and again, I think the internal politics of this in the White House are, we're going to do this because it makes Joe Biden look powerful. A majority of Americans support us doing this, and we know it's not going to work. The courts are going to tell us no. The courts are going to enjoin the effort. They're going to stop us. So it's win-win for Biden. He gets to look powerful, and the courts get to block him, and he gets to blame the courts. The external political problem, though, is that the people who are going to be most fired up to go vote about this are the people who are mad about it. And that hurts the Democrats next year. But it also, by the way, it distracts us from talking about Afghanistan. We've barely spent any time today on Afghanistan, except in relation to 9/11. We barely spent any time. The problem, though, for the Biden administration is also this, that they're going to have progressives who want even more. In fact, overnight, one of the consensuses on the left is that Biden didn't go far enough. Here's Dr. Lena Wynn. She used to be the head of Planned Parenthood. She left because she was actually in favor of women's health, not just killing kids. And they fired her because she wasn't pro-abortion enough. And she was on CNN. Listen to this.
I don't think it goes far enough. I actually think that what Zeke said about interstate travel was exactly right. But in this case, we have childhood immunizations that we don't even think about. All 50 states have laws on the books to require routine childhood immunizations, which we really should be looking at the COVID vaccine the same way. And when it comes to employers, I think what the Biden administration did was quite brilliant because it gives air cover for businesses that have wanted to do this, that have wanted to put vaccine mandates in place, but they didn't want to have their employees complain about them. Now they can say, hey, we didn't really want to do this, but the administration, the federal government is making us do it. It also helps to level the playing field so that people aren't then going to threaten to go to another workplace. If every workplace has that same requirement, that's a good thing. So I don't think it's overreach. I think this is what's needed in the middle of a pandemic. And in fact, I think the Biden administration, if anything, could have gone even further.
Now, what did she want Biden to do? She wanted Biden to say you can't get on an airplane or a train or cross state lines without a vaccine. That's what she wanted. That's what the left wants. Buddy of mine sent me a note and he said, it's one thing to say polls show Americans favor employer mandates. It's another thing to say polls show Americans favor the federal government forcing people. I think that's a fair distinction. I don't know that pollsters have really captured that distinction. What I do know is that I don't know that it matters because the people who are going to be most fired up will be the people who are opposed to this. And you know, that actually helps some people, like Brian Kemp, for example, in Georgia. Brian Kemp, President Trump wants him defeated in a Republican primary. The Trump supporters have failed to get a good candidate against him. He's already come out swinging saying they will sue to stop this mandate in Georgia. That helps him. The politics of it help him. The politics of this help Republican politicians who have gotten in a bad place with Trump voters coming out swinging. Jeff Duncan, I'm in Georgia, lieutenant governor in Georgia. A lot of Republicans are mad at him. He defended the election. And you've got him coming out swinging about this as well. The politics of this help Republicans unite in ways Republicans have been very divided. Joe Biden is a uniter in the sense he's uniting a bunch of different Republican groups against him. The only thing Joe Biden is getting out of this is he looks strong for progressives, and we're not talking about Afghanistan. That doesn't get him very far. The politics of this are as bad as the legal issues. The upside here, though, is that Joe Biden has set up a perfect case for the Supreme Court to rein in federal agency power by scrapping the Chevron doctrine. And that probably will be the result of this. Because, again, John Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, Neil Gorsuch, and Clarence Thomas have all come out in favor of reining in or getting rid of the Chevron standard. You add in Sam Alito, you add in Amy Coney Barrett, you got a 6-3. Maybe you might even have 7-2 because Elena Kagan has suggested that Chevron goes too far. I don't know about Stephen Breyer, maybe so there as well. So you get 8-1. But the Biden administration is undermining federal agencies by doing this because the odds are the Supreme Court now guts federal agency ability to interpret for itself congressional statutes. And that's a great thing if they do that. And that's not what Biden wants, but that may be the byproduct of it. And I'm okay with that. I wouldn't say I'm a chair snob, but I kind of am a chair snob. Y'all, I sit for 3 hours for radio and then all the writing and stuff I do. I'm in my chair in my office a lot, and I bought one of those super expensive Herman Miller chairs, and I've traded it in for my X chair. The moment I sat down and it began to massage my back, I thought, this is the chair for me. Yes, my chair, my X chair, gives me a massage. It also can heat up. It can cool down. It's amazing. The massage, the temperature control, it's designed and made exclusively for the X chair. Once you feel the customized support of its patented dynamic variable lumbar, the DVL, they call it, your back will have never been so happy. What you do, go to xchairerik.com now. That's the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com. For $100 off your order, X Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. And I can tell you, as a radio show host who spends a ton of time in my chair, X Chair really does have complete comfort. So again, go to xchairerik.com now. Letter X, the word chair, E-R-I-C-K.com. For $100 off your order, X Chair has a 30-day guarantee, complete comfort. It's xchairerik.com. Take my advice. Get an X Chair. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson. I want to just real quick on the vaccine stuff. One of my frustrations is I try to engage and interact regularly with listeners, probably more than I should. And I don't mind it because, we're in postmodern times. Not to get philosophical with you, not to get repetitious with you, but you got to understand a point. What is postmodernism? It actually took me a freaking long time to figure out when people talk about postmodernity. What does it mean? Well, we hear it in our conversation now in ways we never did in modernity. What's the difference between the two? The modern world believes that there is objective truth. The postmodern world believes there is not objective truth. So nowadays, how often do you hear people talk about my truth? That's postmodernity. There is my truth, not just the truth. And that it complicates conversations. So you can have something that you fundamentally believe. And if you have something you fundamentally believe, it doesn't matter whether it is the truth. If it is your truth, who's to dispute it? And so one of the hallmarks of postmodernity is that you amplify distrust over trust. You take exceptions to rules and make those the rule, not the exception. So, for example, instead of there are some bad police officers, now all police officers are bad and some are good, as opposed to police officers are good, but there are some bad. That is the truth. Your truth becomes all police officers are bad except for a few. You take the exception, you make it the rule. Distrust over trust, your truth over the truth, and this is the key here, relationalism over objective connectivity. Now, what does that mean? There could be someone out there who objectively says the truth. You couldn't care less because you're relational now. And so I'm okay spending way more time than I probably should engaging one-on-one with listeners who I've developed relationships with, explaining the vaccine, explaining the data, walking people through, and over, what's remarkable is I get the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over from people. It happens all the time. And I'm used to it now, people raising the same objections. Like, for example, we rushed the vaccine. And yeah, the former Surgeon General, Trump's Surgeon General, has come out and said, we shouldn't have talked about how we rushed it. That wasn't really an issue here. What the issue is it takes a massive pool of people on which to test the vaccine. And that means it takes 5 or 6 years to be able to test a vaccine because you're talking about testing on 10,000 people every year for 5 years to get to 500,000 people, to get to 10,000, whatever you need. You want to get 100, 200,000 people to test a vaccine on. So it takes a number of years. With the COVID vaccine, we were able to get the entire pool of people needed to test a vaccine in 6 months. We didn't have to stretch it out over years. There were so many volunteers. Now, with some medicines, it takes years to develop problems, to see problems come up. With vaccines, historically, with vaccines, including mRNA vaccines, there's this rumor going around that they're new, they're experimental, they've never been done. That's actually complete BS. With vaccines, we see the side effects within 6 months or so, because of the way they work. And so we're beyond the time by which we would see the side effects. We're beyond the time by which we would see the ramifications. And we've had hundreds of thousands of people willing to test, which is why we could move so quickly to get them out. It had nothing to do with rushing it and cutting corners. It had everything to do with having a massive pool of people volunteering to help. But I get these constantly, and I constantly have to repeat them, and I'm happy to do that with you guys. Well, as I was saying, let me back this up and explain this a little more, because it is rather significant, the trend lines here. First of all, welcome back. It is Eric Erickson. The phone number, you can be a part of the program. It is 877-973-7425. I want to play a clip for you. I love this clip. When I was a kid, I grew up in Dubai. One of my favorite shows as a kid was Yes, Prime Minister. And the show is about, it started out as a show called Yes, Minister, and it would be on PBS in the U.S. It was a British comedy about Parliament and the goings-on behind Parliament, and eventually the conniving minister becomes Prime Minister. And there is a great, great, great explanation of polling that appeared in the show. And this clip is 40 years old, and it is still one of the most relevant explanations of polling you will ever hear.
He's going to say something new and radical in the broadcast.
What, that silly grand design? Bernard, that was precisely what you had to avoid. How did this come about? I shall need a very good explanation.
Well, he's very keen on it.
What's that got to do with it? Things don't happen just because prime ministers are very keen on them. Neville Chamberlain was very keen on peace.
He thinks it's a vote winner.
Ah, that's more serious, Dan. What makes him think that?
Well, the party have had an opinion poll done. It seems all the voters are in favour of bringing back national service.
Well, have another opinion poll done showing the voters are against bringing back national service.
We can't be for it and against.
Oh, of course they can, Bernard. Have you ever been surveyed?
Yes. Well, not me, actually. My house. Oh, I see what you mean.
Well, Bernard, you know what happens. Nice young lady comes up to you. Obviously, you want to create a good impression. You don't want to look a fool, do you?
No.
No. So she starts asking you some questions. Mr. Woolley, are you worried about the number of young people without jobs?
Yes.
Are you worried about the rise in crime among teenagers?
Yes.
Do you think there's a lack of discipline in our comprehensive schools?
Yes.
Do you think young people welcome some authority and leadership in their lives?
Yes.
Do you think they respond to a challenge?
Yes.
Would you be in favor of reintroducing national service? Yes.
Oh, well, I suppose I might.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Of course you would, Bernard. After all you've told, you can't say no to that. So, they don't mention the first five questions, and they publish the last one.
Is that really what they do?
Well, not the reputable ones, no, but there aren't many of those. So, alternatively, the young lady can get the opposite result.
How?
Mr. Woolley, are you worried about the danger of war?
Yes.
Are you worried about the growth of armaments?
Yes.
Do you think there's a danger in giving young people guns and teaching them how to kill?
Yes.
Do you think it's wrong to force people to take up arms against their will?
Yes.
Would you oppose the reintroduction of national service?
Yes.
There you are, you see, Bernard. The perfect balanced sample. So, we just commission our own survey for the Ministry of Defense. See to it, Bernard.
Listen, on opinion polling, that's why you should never, ever, ever, ever believe opinion polling on issues. Why? People are stupid. People are stupid. Pollsters are tricky. Don't believe it. You got to ask short, simple questions. Who do you like? Who are you for? What do you think? Republican, Democrat? Those tend to be better than the deep dive opinions on public policy. Don't ever believe the public policy was. You know, Dick Morris, I'm not a huge Dick Morris fan, but he said one thing that was very insightful about polling is the job of a poll is to help you sell what you already want to do, not to tell you what you want to do. Bad politicians use polling to tell them what they should do. Good politicians use polling to tell them how to sell what they already want to do. But then there is the ballot questions. Who do you like, Republican or Democrat? Those polls are easier to conduct, but they've gotten seriously flawed in this country. Pollsters have really no idea how to fix them. There's a story today, CNN is changing its methodology altogether on doing polling to try to get better polling. There are two things you can say, and I said it earlier in the show. One is follow a poll's trend lines. If a poll is taken and it's the same poll and it's taken constantly with the same group of people, not the same group, same demographics of people, and the poll heads in a direction, well, you have a reliable indicator on trends. You don't know the exact number. You can't say, well, actually, it's 52-48 or whatever, but you can see the trend. Oh, the Republicans are trending up. Oh, the Democrats are trending down. Why? Because you statistically have the same demographic of people you're surveying, and you're doing it all the time, so we can get a good trend. The other is the polling average. Real Clear Politics has the best polling average. Why? Because it doesn't weight the polls based on any level of credibility, which means there are no biases introduced by Real Clear Politics into their own polling. So the biases sort themselves out in the average. I say all of this in the run-up to talk about public opinion strategies. A Republican-leaning firm. Now, why? Public Opinion Strategies constantly polls the generic ballot. The reason that people in the media, Democrats and Republicans alike, pay attention to Public Opinion Strategies' generic ballot polling question is because they have literally asked this question since I was in college. Public Opinion Strategies has asked the question about the generic ballot for over 20 years. And it's used the same sort of demographic pool. And as a result, people pay attention, Democrats and Republicans alike. And they can say, well, it's a Republican pollster. But they've literally been asking this question for decades. And so you can get a good sense of the trend lines. Josh Krashauer, National Journal, releases this on Twitter. Public Opinion Strategies releases a new national poll showing the generic congressional ballot tied at 42-42. The strongest showing for the GOP since 2015 in their surveys. Here's a notable nugget. And again, they poll the same, they don't poll the same people. They poll the same demographics of people. So they poll the same number of white people, the same number of black people, the same number of men, the same number of women, the same number of rich, the same number of poor, the same number of college graduates, the same number of non-college graduates. College graduates have moved 11 points towards the Republican Party since April of 2020. Let me read you this nugget. The generic ballot is tied 42% among a sample of 800 registered voters in a survey conducted September 1st to September 8th with a margin of error of 3.46%. The last time the generic ballot was tied was October of 2015. It was also 42%. The last time the question was asked was in April of 2020, where voters favored the Democratic candidate by 6 points. The GOP lead has moved 13 points with men, while women have remained unchanged. In 2020, the generic Democrat led among three age groups. Now they only lead among one, the 18 to 34-year-olds. Given that the youngest age cohort usually drops off the most in turnout, this is shaping up to be a real challenge for Democrats. It is. It's not good for them in this way. Now, a couple of things you need to know about this poll. It is registered voters, not likely voters. Registered voters already lean Democrat by 3 to 5 points. If you do a poll of all Americans, it leans to the Democrats about 5 to 7 points. Why? Because all Americans do tend to lean Democrat, all adults. If you do a poll of registered voters still lean to the Democrats 3 to 5 points. A likely voter poll, which you can't do right now because you're so far from the election, tends to get within 2 to 3 points typically. Now, why is this? Well, because likely voters tend to be party voters, registered voters. Anybody can get registered to vote. And then all Americans, well, people are stupid. So, I mean, that's why it leans so far to the left. But this poll of registered voters, of 800 registered voters, it's tied. That's actually significant. And again, it's because, not because it's accurate, not because 42% really do, but because Public Opinion Strategies has been doing this for 20 years. And so they can detect the shifts. And one of the most interesting things is who's not shifted? Women. Follow along with me here, if you will. Do you know the most insufferable group of people on planet Earth? The most insufferable group of people on planet Earth tend to be rich, white, progressive women. Now, I don't mean to insult you if you're a rich, white, progressive woman, but you tend to be the most vocal about politics, the most obnoxious about politics, and the most bossy about politics. You just do. Most people are perfectly fine to keep it to themselves. You're out there with your Hillary Clinton 2016 t-shirt on as if the election is tomorrow instead of a bygone era. You're the one out there in love with John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, or I am in Georgia. You're wearing your Stacey Abrams paraphernalia when you're in California, and you're the one who got thigh sweats over Beto O'Rourke, and you thought he could actually win in Texas. You believed it. Rich, white, progressive women are the most bossy and insufferable in politics, and they're not shifting from the Democrats. Now, here's the problem. As rich, white, progressive women become the vanguard of the Democratic Party, you know who is not going to stay in the Democratic Party? Your regular old married middle-class woman. Your Latino male. Your black woman who wants nothing to do with rich, white, progressive women. They're not going to stay in the Democratic Party. As the Democratic Party becomes more and more reflective of Nancy Pelosi and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, it is less and less reflective of working-class Hispanic and black men and women. And white men and women as well. The fact that college-educated women are getting so into the Democratic Party is, I mean, the Democratic Party is becoming a party of Karens. That's ultimately what it comes down to. It is the rich, progressive women who are the ones going viral on the internet last year in the pandemic, showing up at local grocery stores, filming the people who weren't wearing masks, trying to get social media to cancel them. That's the Karens of the world. And the Democratic Party's becoming the party of Karens. That's not a viable option for the Democratic Party. But here's the thing. Karens are the last to know they're Karens. You know the old joke that every family has a black sheep, and if your family doesn't have one, it's probably you? The women who don't realize they're turning everyone off are the last to realize they're turning everyone off. And they're the Democratic Party these days. Now, I'm not trying to be flippant. I'm not trying to be annoying. I'm not trying to be obnoxious. I'm not even trying to like troll you with this. It's actually the truth. You may not like it, but it's actually true. And I think deep down, most of you know that it's true, that there is a body of female voters who have become the most politically antagonistic people in the country. And these people tend to turn off other people. And in particular, if they continue to dominate the Democratic Party, as it seems like they're doing, they're going to drive out minority voters. I've told you this story before. For those of you who are new to the program, I have now heard this story from multiple people about different women. All of them, white progressive women, who after the George Floyd riots decided they needed to join racial reconciliation groups. And in each of these stories, one, I am 1,000,000,000% confident of the source, told me that it wound up these groups descended into chaos when the rich white women began explaining to the black women that they were actually victims of society and couldn't see the world the way it worked because of white supremacy. I'm not making this up. I know of a group where this happened, where the rich white woman was explaining to the black women in the group that they just really, they were so influenced by white supremacy, they couldn't see the world work. And the argument was over, they just want to be treated like everyone else. And they want white people to treat them like white people treat their friends. And this woman was trying to demand that they expect more and demand more, and that's not the way the world works. And inevitably, in each of these situations, and I have no reason to dispute based on who was telling me these stories that it's not true, that it was the rich white women trying to open the black women's eyes to their inferiority and oppressed nature, and the black women wanted nothing to do with it. They were successful in their own right, in their careers, being told that they weren't. This is where the Democratic Party is headed. And the smugness of the Democrats who really believe that they will be the dominant party because of California in particular, which is anomalous, is insane. The reality is there's no such thing as a permanent political majority. And when you start acting with the arrogance of a person who believes there's a permanent political majority, God has a sense of humor and God will not be mocked. Now, you should not mock Eden Pure thunderstorms either, because they clean the air in your house. And in fact, they eliminate the odors. So the fry odor, for example, I love to make fried shrimp tacos. You can get the recipe at ewerickson.com. I love to make fried shrimp tacos. And if I fry in the kitchen, my wife hates the smell of shrimp. I can use the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, and it wipes out the odor. Otherwise, she's in there with her essential oils, smelling up the house to smell like limes or something, when I can just use the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, and it wipes out the odor. Right now, you can get the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. In fact, you can get three of them, and you can save $200 on the Eden Thunderstorm three-pack for the whole house. You get three units under $200. Whole house protection at a fraction of the cost compared to a lot of other air purifiers out there that can run over $600 just for one unit, and you have to cover the filters. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm is filterless. What you do is you go to EdenPureDeals.com. You click on my name, Eric Erickson. You click on the Eden Pure three-pack deal. You put it in your cart. At checkout, you will see a discount code box, and you put in E-R-I-C-K and the number 3, no space, Eric 3, and you will save $200. You'll get free shipping, and you'll get three Eden Pure Thunderstorms. Clean the air. Don't mask it. Clean the air in your house. This is breaking news, and it is something the Biden administration really has to pay attention to. Charlie Baker. Charlie Baker is the governor of Massachusetts. He's the only statewide elected official in Massachusetts, and his lieutenant governor, they run as a ticket there. And he is the most popular governor in the United States. I know. A Republican governor of Massachusetts, who is the most popular most popular governor in the nation. Massachusetts love Charlie Baker. He's a Democrat for all intents and purposes. I mean, he's a pro-abortion, moderate Republican who wanted Donald Trump impeached. That gives you a sense of the guy. He's come out in the last 10 minutes and said there will be no mandates in Massachusetts, that the state will not comply with the Biden mandate, OSHA mandate, that he wants people to get the vaccine. He has made it mandatory for state employees in Massachusetts. He wants local governments to make it mandatory, but he will not himself mandate in the private sector. He says the government has no business doing that. That's pretty significant. When you have lost Charlie Baker on an issue, the most popular governor in the nation, that's not good for Joe Biden. Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, is aligning with Kristi Noem today. Doug Ducey of Arizona, Greg Abbott in Texas, and Governor Bill Lee in Tennessee. They're all planning on filing a suit to stop the vaccine mandate from the White House. I just don't see this ending up favorably in court for the Biden administration. But again, you need to keep this in mind. Keep this in mind. This is all about distracting you from Afghanistan on the anniversary of 9/11. That's what all of this really is about, because they know they can't do it. It was interesting yesterday. Listen to the reporter shouting questions as the president yet again walked away.
Look, we're the United States of America. There's nothing, not a single thing we're unable to do if we do it together. So let's stay together. God bless you all and all those who continue to serve on the front lines of this pandemic. And may God protect our troops. Get vaccinated.
Is it constitutional? He walks away. Is it constitutional? Is it constitutional? I mean, the reporters are getting really good at yelling questions at him that he refuses to ask. And back in December, he said this.
No, I don't think it should be mandatory. I wouldn't demand to be mandatory, but I would do everything in my power. Just like I don't think masks have to be made mandatory nationwide.
No mandate back in December. Now he's all on board the mandates. I don't think this is going to fly. This is a distraction. It is willful to get us to stop talking about Afghanistan and move to where the polling suggests the public supports him. And the courts will stop him, and he will then blame the courts. Now, tomorrow, I won't be here. It's the weekend, but it's September 11th. I hope you'll spend some time reflecting on that day. I hope you'll text the word data to 33777, get my interview with Robin Lewinsky, and subscribe, because I will send out the Brigadier General's interview tomorrow.